It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Tickled at to be with you. This Saturday seems like about the same time every Saturday, a little bit after 6. I get to see my smiling face of my co-host and my the greatest producer that ever walked the face of the earth, Blake Schneider.
Yes, he is. I cannot disagree with that.
Yeah.
And now becoming one of the hottest new talk show hosts.
That's what I'm hearing.
Sports Radio 810.
Yeah, why do they say he's kind of a big deal?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's kind of a big deal now. You think he'll swell up?
Yeah, I think he has potential for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he'll swell up, you know, and they'll pull up here in a limo.
Forget us little people.
Yeah, let him out. Come on in, do the show.
What was your guys' names again?
Yeah. Also in the studio, well within striking distance, I have Greg Thompson. We're going to talk fishing. There's a rumor running around that you were seen in public, Greg, with Brent Frazee yesterday.
Well, the thing about it is, it's kind of odd. In the last 2 days, I've been on both ends of the spectrum. This morning, I'm sitting with one of the best fishermen I know, and yesterday I was with Brent.
Wow. Yeah,
you've reached the pinnacle.
Yes, I fished with Brent yesterday. What a wonderful individual and outdoorsman. Just had a blast. Oh,
what?
I know.
Don't be saying nice things about him.
Hey, he gave me $100.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
did he have any true stories?
Next.
Yeah, right.
Ladies and gentlemen, my understanding is, I was talking to some marketing people, that we're gaining an awful lot of listeners over the last quarter. Tickled to death if you're a new listener. Excited. Why would you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and listen to us?
Right.
I don't understand it, but we're welcome.
Well, and thank you.
And tell your friends, and, you know, we're evidently doing pretty good, sounds to me like. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I can't either.
Yeah, what the heck?
I mean, we do this, but I don't really even imagine that there's somebody out there listening.
Yeah, don't act like there is.
No.
The deal.
Maybe they're listening pre-coffee.
This is true. This is true. Or pre-whiskey or whatever.
Yeah. Or maybe continuation.
Yeah.
Maybe what about all the people post-whiskey?
Yeah.
Right. You say that with authority.
Yeah.
That came from the young guy.
I woke
guy.
Up early.
What's in that bottle?
Shine.
Shine. This is the show that answers, does size matter? What do you think, Mark? Does size matter?
Hopefully not.
Why you went silent?
I think we're going to find out this morning on our first guest.
Truth. That's very true.
Well, the reason I bring size matters up, and you guys' mind's always in the gutter. You guys got to think different. You know, this is an outdoor show. This is not about your appendage.
No, I was talking about
Jesus.
Fishing lures. I don't know where you're going.
Do you downsize every once in a while?
I do. Yep, absolutely.
As the summer gets on, do you go to a bigger bait?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But I know some guys that just, they bigger is better all the time. Yeah. They never downsize.
I know people like
and
that.
And there are, I mean, there's no doubt, bigger fish catch bigger bait. But sometimes just catching numbers of fish is more fun.
I'll drink to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sun coming up, I'll drink to it.
But as Greg referenced, we have a young man that's going to join us here in just a few minutes. And size does matter for him.
Yes.
And he caught a new state record, a new lake record for Milford Lake, crappie.
What is state record? Anybody have any idea about the state record?
Yeah, it's,
The
white crappie is 4 pounds.
What?
2 ounces.
In Kansas?
Uh-huh. And the black state record is 4 pounds, 4.63 pounds.
Ooh.
So he's not far off.
Now, wait a minute. I'm from Missouri. You got to show me. I mean, that's really what the state record in the state of Kansas is, four pounds?
That's what the books say.
Did anybody see this fish?
Well, no.
Oh, okay.
We do have pictures of Palmer Keith's fish.
Yes, and his was 3 pounds, 11 ounces?
It bounced the scales at 312, and they settled on 310.
310, okay.
310. It bounced the scales because they flopped, huh?
Well,
I don't know.
Settled out.
How old is this fish?
Anybody? That's a good question, but it'll be over 5 years old.
You think it would be?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep. And it was identified by the biologist as a for sure white crappie.
Hmm. Strange times, isn't it? You know, every year, this time of year, we announce some new record, whether it be a spoonbill, flathead, channel cat, crappie, something. It just, when does it end?
Yeah.
You know, you just wonder about that in the deal. What is the bite? What's going on at Truman? Are they in deep water?
They're deeper. There's still some fish up on the bank. Most of them have spawned. A lot of them have spawned, but, you know, there's still some stragglers that you can find up on the bank. Those are typically smaller fish, but, yeah, they're still catching. They're catching a lot of post-spawn fish now. They're out on their summer pattern. You know, they're at main lake flats, anywhere from 14 foot of water, fishing down 7-8 feet, but a lot of them.
And catch them on what?
Some people are switching over to minnows, but the jig bite's still pretty good.
Anybody can catch fish on minnow.
Yeah, but it's been good. This past week, there's been a lot of fish caught. Not just Truman, but most all the big lakes. Kansas side is on fire. Clinton, Hillsdale, Melvern, they're all real good. Milford.
Yeah.
Boy. Palmer Keith, the young man, catch that 3-pound crappie, 3-pound, 10 ounce.
Wow.
But I understand, I talked to Vic Ertley out there at Milford, and he said the crappie fishing has just been fantastic out there.
You know, it was due to cycle. Remember, we talked about this, and it was always kind of good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was great at one time, and it kind of went away.
Well, it's back. As far as a good crappie lake, it is back.
You know, it's the best-kept secret in the United States. Since how we only got those three listeners this morning, but we can talk about this.
Well, and
I
think even better kept is Tuttle. Tuttle Creek.
Yeah.
And from what I'm hearing, the crappie fishing there is just as good as it gets. And the white bass fishing, you get seriously close to getting a 4-pound white bass out of that lake. But then the saugers, and I hear, it's really.
Is there hybrids in Tuttle?
No.
You sure?
Yes.
110% sure. How do you tell the difference between a hybrid and a white?
Well, you can pretty much tell by looking at the lateral lines along the fish. But to tell for sure, look at the tooth patch on their tongue. And a hybrid has two oval tooth patches.
Oh, boy.
On the back of their tongue.
That'll come up at a cocktail party night, and they'll be standing there at that awkward moment, and they'll say, how do you tell the difference between a white bass and a hybrid?
Okay,
it's got the two ovals.
Spread the fins and check the crotch.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you another one is Smithville, and, you know, what is it,
right.
2 years ago they went to a 30-fish limit because they had so many black crappie out there. They're catching Frazier and I was out there the other night, and right at dark, I didn't catch a fish under 12 inches.
In the past,
you'd catch 200 fish, and two of them could go in the live well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really helping that lake, too. A lot of good fishing out there.
Good news there.
What about basking in the aura of Brent Frisee? I mean, did it rub off on you any at all? I mean,
well, I'm trying to still get my eyes adjusted from that plumber's cleavage that I had to endure yesterday. But the fish they just came to the surface and looked at him. And I swear, the biggest bass I caught, he winked at Brent before he went back in the water. You know, so I think Brent's caught every fish in that lake.
The time I fished with him, he said, go get in the boat. So we're out in the boat waiting on him, and he comes down with his white robe and his staff and flowing hair out the back, you know. And he's got that buff body, you know, like a Greek god.
And
the trumpets, the people across were cued, and the music came up.
They throw rose petals at the
exactly.
front of his feet.
Yeah.
You sure that wasn't tendonitis?
Down the ramp he came. And so we get on the water, and he stands up and does his Pasco Biscum thing, and it was just bizarre.
But, I don't know. I've got this visual, this plumber's cleavage. This is bothering me.
It's bothered me since yesterday.
Better than a plumber's crack, isn't it, I suppose?
Well, it's the same thing, isn't it?
Same thing. Now, we had an absolute blast yesterday. What a wonderful guy he is.
Caught some bass, huh?
I think we stopped at 34.
Wow. On our Facebook, there's a picture of him holding a bass that I would have deleted. Did you see this? Have you seen this picture?
But did you read what I put about that?
I didn't. No, I don't read. But it just, I can't. It's just bizarre. You should never show that kind of fish. You're supposed to be a fishing pro.
You know what? Anybody can hit a hole that's as big as a coffee cup. But if you can catch a fish that's got a mouth the size of a pencil, now that takes talent.
That's true. You can't argue with that.
The voice of reason. That's Mark Tobin. I don't know about you guys. Too early in the morning. You guys, three list. Oh, we got John Serta coming on.
Yeah.
Been wanting to have John on for quite a while.
We've been talking about that. Me too. I miss him. Yeah. He's the best dog trainer in the galaxy.
Yeah. I had my dog over, and he worked him over and did a wonderful job with him. But he didn't autograph him. I want him to autograph the dog. You know, it's pretty simple. But he usually pulls out that magic marker and writes his name on the side of your dog. You know.
Right.
Did you ever go to you guys probably never been to a fox hunt where they have spray paint numbers on the dogs?
No, never have.
Years ago, Fillmore, Missouri, used to have the darndest fox hunt. This goes way back, 65 something. And people would come from all over. That's back when we had foxes. And they would cast their dogs, is what they say. You know, throw them out and score them. And if your dog barked, you got a point and all this stuff. But they would spray paint their number on the side of the dog. Well, about a week later after the hunt, you'd drive through Fillmore, and there'd always be two or three dogs laying around with a number on the side of them. You couldn't find them, but it was just bizarre. So, if you've ever been to Fillmore, you'll understand why.
Yeah, right.
It's just a strange little community nestled in the fertile hills of northwest Missouri. You know, just a lot of people up there have been beamed up. They sat on the rings of Saturn, you know. They hear voices all the time. I kind of join right in with them from time to time.
Yeah, you fit right in there.
How's my good friend Joe Falco doing? Are you getting any boats in yet?
Not very many, but they've got a good selection of kayaks right now, the Jackson Kayaks.
He had 80 that one day, and I think he sold unbelievable amount of them.
Yeah,
quickly,
and he's still able to get some of those. And, you know, that's really a up-and-coming way to fish is kayaking. And Joe, when he decided to carry kayaks, he decided that he'd take Jackson kayaks because they have a reputation for being the most stable kayak. And that's what you want if you're going to go fishing. And they've got so many accessories on these things. There's some that you can pedal, fish hands-free, or you can put a electric trolling motor on it.
Oh,
you put electronics on
me.
It. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they've got that. And then Dave Hemme, he's the head mechanic out there. If you have a problem, when you have a problem with your boat, take it out there. They're the best folks around to be able to
pick
it.
Where are they?
They're in Belton, last Belton exit. It's the Cass Road exit. They're on the west side of 49 Highway, the last Belton exit.
What a good
good folk.
They are good folks, aren't they?
Yep. Yeah. I just like to go in. You like to go into Reed Chevrolet and just visit with them. I like to do that with down there at Sports and Bath. And I just love walking in there smelling the new boat smell.
Well, it's kind of like new boats left?
Yeah, there's
got
some.
One or two?
Yeah. But you better get them, because if you need to order one, it's going to be the end of the summer before you can get
one. You know, I was talking about Reed Chevrolet when I was up here the other day. They got in a brown one, and I was out there licking on the side. I fell in love, and I was hugging it, and that sales guy came out and said, Fred,
you're making a scene,
and you're bizarre. And I said, you got to go.
Leave me alone.
Leave me alone. Get off the lot.
Here's a chocolate bar. Go on.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Get away. Get back. Oh, well, what the hey. Hey, I'm sorry, but you're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We got to take a little break. We'll be right back.
And we're going to get Keith Palmer Keith on the phone
after
this break.
He caught the big fish.
The big fish out of Milford.
Out of Milford. Right. Ought to make it interesting. Go to our Facebook. Take a look at that, too.
Yeah.
Instagram's on Instagram?
I'll put it on Instagram.
Put it on Instagram. We'll see what goes on.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. Going to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are sponsored by SAR, S-A-R-U-S-A. If you're thinking about a pistol for maybe home protection or just to plink around with, look into that full line that they've got. They've got new products hitting the market every day. They're starting to fill up the pipeline. The demand is off the chart. The word is getting around. When they won the NATO test, and they also were featured in some major magazines as the gun of the year, S-A-R-U-S-A. Go by and check them out. And if you want one, go to your friendly dealer and say, I'd like to have a SARS pistol. And for the value of the money, you aren't going to believe it. I have a K-12. Love it. I got out of the pistol mode years ago, and I'm back in it again. I cannot wait. In fact, after we get off this radio show today, I'm going to go shoot the pistol with a bunch of guys. Ran into a guy the other day. He said, I heard about your SARS. He said, I got one. He said, unbelievable. He said, I can't say enough good thing about that pistol. He said, it cycles every time, shoots where I'm looking. He said, the recoil, it fits me good. It's got adjustability. They got them in the striker fire. They got them in everything. Every model that you want, they will have it in a 45s and 9s. So anyway, and the 9s are starting to fill up. There's some 9 millimeters starting to show up in the market again. So next purchase, SARUSA. Who do we have here as a guest, Mark?
Well, what a pleasure it is for me to introduce quite a young fisherman we have right here. His name is Palmer Keith, and Palmer just caught a new Milford Lake record crappie, and boy, was it a big one. Palmer, thanks for getting up and being with us. How are you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you, sir?
Great. Well, congratulations. Boy, you caught you a big fish. How big was this crappie that you caught?
3 pounds, and it kind of weighed between 8 ounces to 12 ounces. It finally settled at about 11.
Wow. That is a
monster.
Toad. You know, there's a lot of guys fish their entire life and never catch a fish like that. And you just, well, happy birthday, by the way. Happy belated birthday. You just turned 15 yesterday, is that right?
Yes, sir, I did.
Well, how did you have a good birthday?
I did. Very good birthday.
Well, I hear this trip that you took when you caught this crappie was part of a birthday present. So tell me about the trip. Who did you fish with?
I was fishing with my grandpa and my cousin Dylan.
And did you use a guide service?
Yes, we did. Shout out to Grandpa Boone's Fishing Guide. Brad, the guide there, added to the experience.
Wow, cool. Cool. So what did you go out there fishing for? Were you fishing for crappie or were you fishing for wipers?
Crappie at first, and then we switched to wipers, and that's when I caught the giant crappie.
Naturally. Wow. Well, before we get to the crappie, did you catch any wipers?
Personally, I did not. The other two caught about 7 combined.
Oh, wow. Wow. Have you ever caught a wiper before?
I have not.
Well, you definitely, needs to be the next thing that you catch is a wiper. Boy, I tell you, they will straighten out your string. They fight, and then when you think they're done, then they get mad, and then they get an attitude, and then they fight some more. So, yeah, they're much fun to catch. So you started fishing for wipers after you fished. Did you catch any crappie before you caught that big one?
I caught about 7 little ones, and then we moved spots.
And that's when you caught the big one. So you, what were you using for bait?
I was using a Nightcrawler.
Really?
Why not?
That's a good wiper bait. Heck yeah.
apparently a big crappie bait, yeah, too.
Must work still, huh?
So did it hit hard? Did you know you had a big fish right off?
Well, I thought it was a wiper, and then I realized it's not fighting like a wiper from what we've seen. And Brad, the tour guide, said it wasn't, and we didn't really know. And then he was like, that's a big crappie, as it started to break the surface.
Wow.
So who was more excited, you or Grandpa Ernie?
Probably Grandpa Ernie knew a little bit more than I did.
So what did you think when you saw that fish?
I didn't know too much about crappie, but it was a lot bigger than the other one. Sure.
Yeah, it was.
Now, I'm thinking you've got a competitive advantage over the rest of us fishermen. Aren't you a competitive swimmer?
Yes, sir, I am.
So it's easier for you to think like a fish then. So I think you cheated.
Don't reveal my secret.
Oh, that's just great. Big fish. And we need to ask our listeners out there, Palmer is trying to find a taxidermist. And if anybody out there knows a good taxidermist, boy, we sure appreciate a call. If you can call us here at the station, 913-3810-810 is our number. And if you could help Palmer find a taxidermist to mount this fish of a lifetime. And what a fish. 3 pounds, 11 ounces. What the heck? That,
wow.
And that beat the old record. The old record was, what did we say, 2 pounds?
Two nine.
So, you know, over a pound.
Hey, over a pound.
How about this? How many times do you know that when the guide wants to get an identical copy of the fish, and also the game warden came down on his day off and wanted a picture with the fish.
He'd have called me. I'd have been over there, too.
Wow. Palmer, you have no idea. I mean, there's most fishermen I know would give one of their fingers to catch a fish like that. I mean, that is just an incredible fish, and what a great accomplishment for you, man. So do you like – do you fish very much?
I fish about every other week.
Every other week.
Wow.
Wow,
good.
What do you like to fish for?
Usually bass.
Bass.
Any particular places that you like to fish?
Yes, sir. On the back of hole 9 in a water hazard at Tiffany Green's golf course.
Whoa.
Don't give out them kind of secrets.
Could you get more specific? Which side of the pond? So what's your go-to bass bait?
Usually a spinner.
Spinner bait?
That'll work every time.
So who got you interested in fishing?
A mix of my grandpa and my stepbrother.
Cool.
Well, it sounds like you're a great young man, and congratulations once again on catching the fish of a lifetime. 3-pound, 11-ounce crappie.
Wow.
Palmer Keith. Wow. And happy, what a birthday present. So do you have any plans to get back out to Milford to chase the wipers?
We might. We don't know. Brad's pretty busy, so.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Palmer. Thanks for getting up and joining us this morning, and hope you get out there and catch another big one.
Me too. Thank you very much, sir.
Palmer, catch the next one a little bit bigger, will you please?
Okay.
You're not too far from the state record.
Yeah, and then we'll have you back on.
Yeah.
Yeah, he won't know us then.
His endorsement check is in the mail.
Well, thanks again, Palmer.
Thank
congratulations,
you, buddy.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, thank you. Take care.
What a nice young man.
Really nice young man. Very polite young man.
Parents did good with him.
Yes.
I don't understand. I suppose it's still soaking in with him a little bit, but.
I mean, that's just an incredible fish of a lifetime. Oh. I've never caught one that big, and I've caught thousands upon thousands
of crappie. Well, now, wait a minute. You came in here one day in the studio, and you'd been down to Arkansas.
This was Toledo Bend.
Toledo Bend.
Uh-huh. Oh, now, that was another one, but that wasn't.
Monticello, maybe in Arkansas?
It wasn't over 3 pounds. No, that was Realtree.
Now, if you'd told me they were 3 pounds, I'd have believed you. That's how big they were.
Yeah, they were big.
Yeah.
2 pounds, 2.5, had 1, 2.75.
That works.
But I've had 1 3-pound fish in my life. It was 3 pounds, 2 ounces, and that was the Toledo Bend when I was in my teens.
Hmm.
But haven't caught one near what Palmer caught.
Isn't this the world record in a farm pond in Illinois? Does anybody remember this, or maybe Indiana? Hello.
Oh, I'm trying to think now. The world record black crappie was caught like 18 months ago. And it was close to 6 or something.
I had
a nice, fine young guest call into the show to let us know about a good taxidermy place.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
Who is it?
Young Palmer to go take his stuff too.
What taxidermy is it?
I got the Schweda Taxidermy in Oskaloosa, Kansas. Schweda. Oh. That's S-C-H-W-E-D-A. Schweda.
Schweda.
And sweet.
I have an answer for that, but I can't say it on the air. We were looking for a job, and we found this one, I guess.
I about put the young man on the phone, and he said, "Oh, don't put me on the air."
Schweda?
Schweda.
And do you remember Tim Gassner? He was the gentleman that had the duck that had the transmitter on it.
Yes.
He recommends, let's see, he sent me one here too, Captured Expressions Taxidermy. They're in Olathe. Their phone number, Palmer, if you got a pen and a paper, their phone number is area code 913-522-3322. Don't mess with my tutu.
Tutu. When they get this done, we'll have the taxiderms come in the studio and do the presentation. He can't see it until then.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Wouldn't that be a hoot?
Cool.
And we'll have drum roll and have Brent Frazee come in. He's flowing robe. And
You're paying for it, Fred?
I didn't go that far. you know, this is talk radio. We starve to death at this job. You know, Blake could. Blake's got money, but what the hey. Hey, I'm sorry, but you're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We've got to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors, and we are brought to you by King City Lumber Company, kingcitylumber.com. You need an outbuilding, which who doesn't? You need a new garage, loafing shed, a place for your combine, a place for your tractor, garage behind the house. Go across the street, build one for your neighbor free, whatever you want to do. Wouldn't that be nice? Your neighbor paid for your new garage across the street.
Nice.
Wouldn't that be nice of them?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that cement your relationship with your neighbor?
Would for me.
Yeah. Say kind things about them. Hug them, you know. But if you're going to have one built, King City Lumber, Marty and Monty Tunks, the finest humans to walk the face earth, they come to work wearing robes. They majestic-looking robes, you know. So they're just good people. I just love them. Master carpenters, they'll do it right. They will not leave the job until the job is 110% satisfied. KingCityLumber.com. Go to their website, KingCityLumber.com. So before we're going to have John Sutter, we're going to go to the dogs.
Joe is going to the dogs.
Total turkey harvest. Drum roll, please. No. My producer is off.
Caught him off guard there.
Yeah, he's... A lot of things go right by him. 34,601 birds.
How's that compared to last year?
I think it was about 41,000, 42,000. Well,
not
so
bad.
Down about 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 in the deal. Is he making obscene gestures in there?
Yeah, I think he said you were number one.
I'll tell you what, I gave him a nice present this morning, and the reward was I get an obscene gesture from him. I mean, what kind of a place are we? I can't tell you what he did there. I don't know. The show was kind of family oriented at one time. I don't know what happened to it, but what the hey. But anyway, where was I? We were talking about
5,000 or 6,000 birds down.
Yeah,
from last year.
And the
I
article,
thought it was going to be worse than that. Really?
Yeah, the article that came out with it from official statement from the MDC was that the hunting licenses were down.
Seems to me that there's more to it than that.
Yeah, reality is a terrible thing. You know, there's just, I went 3 days in a row, never heard a bird.
Yeah, there's just not as many birds out there.
Rob Boland got a real nice gobbler the other morning over in Kansas. I think he probably had him tied to a tree. I don't know, but I didn't say anything bad about him. But he's a good kid. I love him to death, but he's just, I don't know. Well, I went turkey hunting with Rob. It was one of the most enjoyable. We didn't kill a bird, and I had more fun with Rob Boland. I hadn't hunted with him for years. We were over in Kansas. If the wind ever quits blowing in Kansas, everybody's going to fall over. It's windiest state that it
I know, and it
South
stops.
Dakota and Kansas. It's just unbelievable on the deal. So, anyway, that was what it was. So, by the magic of the telephone, we have our professional, the one we 110% recommend, the master of the connoisseur of dogs, John Sirta. John, how you doing this morning?
Doing great, Fred. Sitting here in my John Sirta training clothes, just getting ready for another day.
Have you been bitten yet today?
Well, no.
Okay.
But, you know, as I always say, the day is still young, and we got lots of volunteers out there.
I'll tell you, being bitten by a dog is not a very pleasurable experience. Man, that hurts.
Well, I've had a few of them, Fred, and that's the truth. I got the scars to prove it.
Why do they want to bite someone like you? You're so sweet and lovable. Maybe they think you're just a piece of meat. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think any dog that actually bites a human could have just a little bit of a defect. Yeah, you got to be careful. Some of the dogs are easy to spot. Some of them, they'll come up and get you from behind before you can even think about it. But, generally, even if dogs will bark and growl, they're not going to bite you. But some of them, they don't care. Chomp.
Yeah.
So,
do you think if you showed up on your property in a postal uniform, you'd get bit?
Well, you know, I just don't know. Really don't know.
I don't know. I don't know why I said that. It was just a strange thought. Went through my brain again on the deal. So, you know, I've got some people that live, just kind of toward the north end of St. Joe. And the lady I was in Hy-Vee the other day, and they'd got a brand new 8-week-old yellow lab. And she said, what in the world do I do? How do I start this dog out? And I said, well, get on YouTube for the first thing, you know, and look at all that stuff. But I said, if you happen to be up at 6:30 Saturday morning, I'm going to have John Serta on there. And she said, there is no way I'm going to get up at 6:30 on Saturday, which I don't blame her a bit on the deal. But, John, in this case here, this 8-week-old puppy, what are they going to do? What's step A?
Well, step A is basically just getting used to the collar. Put a collar on them, and start off with what we call puppy collars, which are pretty thin. And as they get older, you want to increase the size of the collar until you get all the way up to the big boy collars, which is generally what we call an O-ring collar. That means the buckle is on the bottom of the collar, and the O-ring is at the top, so that the O-ring is always handy when you're trying to snap the dog up to lead. And there's many, many reasons for that. One is because if the dog ever gets hung up in brush or something like that, it's not going to strangle the dog. It's made so that it will just about self-release if they pull on it. So, but getting used to dragging a rope around, because a lot of the stuff that you start off pups with is going to involve either a lead, which I don't care for, or a rope. Mm-hmm. And you'd be working on the sit command, the hear command, maybe playing a little bit on retrieving, but you don't want to do too much on a pup, because you can burn them out for one if you do it too long. So you just want to kind of keep everything happy when they're pups. And then you can start a little bit more formal stuff as they hit 4 or 5 months. We start training dogs formally down here, at least labs anyway, anywhere from 5, 5.5 to 6 months for the average dog. So
wow.
Do some just real simple stuff with them. Teach them their name, coming to you when they're called. They have to do that.
Can you
a little bit of heel.
Could you work with my co-host, Mark Tobin? I mean, he won't come, he won't sit, he won't listen. What are we going to do with Mark?
Well, we can just put the e-collar on him, and he'll say, yes, sir, yes, sir.
In all honesty, is it important to train the owner as well as the dog?
Boy, oh, boy. There's the million-dollar question right there. And I mean, not that much. But, yes, now that's one of the things that we like to do. And I will literally, when people come in for basically a visit with their dog, because I will show them a few things and sit back and watch how the dog responds to the owner, because a lot of times a dog's going to recognize a authority figure, and that's me. Mm-hmm. And then the owner comes in, they say, what the heck is this guy trying to say?
Exactly.
Here they go again. So we work the dog until the dog says, okay, this guy has the magic words too, and we better mind him. So, yep, very good question.
Yeah. You surprised me.
That was a good question.
Yeah. John, my brother has a couple of boxers, and you get them out in the front yard, and they just go crazy barking. And is there any way to get dogs to stop barking like that?
Well, I mean, you got to figure out why they're barking. You know, some dogs are going to bark just because they want to hear their head rattle. And some of them think there's something out there. They're a little paranoid, and they might see something out there, and then they got a reason to bark a little bit. But some of them just bark for the heck of it. And we just don't allow that. If there's somebody out there that they see that they think is a threat, okay, good, that's your job. But the ones that are just what we call nervous barkers, and we got a few of them right now at the kennel, they probably need a little bit of work. And one of the quickest things, and I'm not really into electronic training, and Fred knows that, they have devices out there right now that when a dog barks over a certain amount of time, it's going to get a little bit of stimulation, and then it will get more stimulation and more. Do all this automatically, because you need to catch the dog in the act. You can't go out there and yell at the dog for barking, and 2 or 3 minutes later get him by the rope and yank him around and eyeball him, you know. So you got to catch him in the act. And those electronic devices actually are a pretty good deal.
He found, and he's definitely no dog trainer, and your advice is way better than what he does. He found if the dogs are barking out in the front yard, they just put them in the backyard.
There you go.
And for them, do you know what time a dog likes to go and go to the bathroom? His dogs are like clockwork.
Really?
It's at 2:30.
2:30.
2:30. There you go.
God, it's too early. Mark, it's 6:44 in the morning. Why would you do that? Make people think like that? I don't understand. You know,
and they have a couple of snacks that they really like.
What is?
They're called woofles.
Woofles. Waffles.
Woofles.
Not waffles.
It's their breakfast food.
Oh, got it.
You better stick to your day job, Mark.
Mow too much grass and maybe smoke some. I'm not sure. I don't know what's going on here. I'm sorry, John. I've tried to control him. If I had a shock collar, I would have just hit him up with it.
Yeah, right.
You know, the deal. Hey, I'm going to ask you a dumb question. I've asked you a million questions over the years. You've been on with me for 30-some years. What can you get a dog overtrained?
Actually, you know, that's funny you mentioned that. I've got a gal up in that helps me here at the kennel, but she's up in Minnesota right now, running a German short hair in senior test, going for master.
Uh-huh.
And I told her a story about a dog named Darren, and this is another trainer that used to help us up north when we was up in Liberty. And that dog at 6 months old was steady wing and shot, and just did everything you would want a senior dog, or maybe even close to a master level dog. Doing great at 6 months. Unfortunately, they put so much time in the dog until he was just burnt out, and he quit on him. Huh. And that's what you got to be really, really careful. You can overtrain a dog and pretty much end up with a puddle of dog meat. So
yeah.
just do enough. I tell Megan a lot, you know, sometimes the dogs have just about got to be on the edge of being a renegade. In other words, dogs that run out there like crazy but do their job and are happy about it. You get a dog that is just dejected and his head's hanging down and his tail's hanging down and he don't want to do his job, well, you're in trouble. So keep them happy, but keep them, you know, firm but fair is my my saying. So make them have fun, but make them mind too.
We've talked about it over the past, the terrible twos. Can you go into that a little bit?
Well, it's a thing that they all go through. I call it a teenage years. Hormones kick in, and you'll start to notice that sometime after the dogs start hiking, you know, do shoulder dominance and everything, and females the same way after a first heat cycle. But, yeah, there's you just expect it anymore. And it doesn't matter what breed it is. So anytime between, I tell people, you know, 4 months before they turn two up until 4 months after they turn two, and it's just going to be somewhere in that area, they start exhibiting some really odd behavior. Especially dogs that have started as a younger dog and they did really well and now they're just flipping you off, basically. So what we tell people is just train right through it. You know, start with your basics. Keep working on the basics, even though they're flipping you off, just keep doing it. And when they come out of that time period, they'll settle down a lot quicker than a dog that's just allowed to run crazy.
Hey, John, whether it's a hunting dog or a house dog, what is the proper way to discipline your dog?
Tell you what, it depends on you. You know, some people that can't discipline. They just don't want to do it. You know, I'm going to make this puppy afraid of me or make him hate me, and that's not true at all. But there are certain ways you can do it. I like to get dogs, look them right in the eye, say something to them, and Fred seen me do this.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
you can get a dog by the collar. It just depends on how bad the situation is. Shake them up a little bit, you know, look them right in the eye, say the ABCs in the bad tone, and they straighten up pretty quick. But now you don't want to ever beat on a dog or kick on a dog unless you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But so yeah, there's lots of different ways, but not too much pressure.
You know, we were at doing the celebrity shoot up there, and John was there, and he was down on all fours talking to the dog. And everybody was looking at him, and I walked over and said, John, hey, get up. You know, you look bad down there. And he said, no, that dog understands me. I said, no, it's a dog, D-O-G, dog, you know. No, he said, I have to talk to this dog like that. And I've never put that behind me, John. I think maybe you should get counseling or some training, too, you know.
Oh, yeah, well, absolutely. Everybody needs counseling.
Yeah. Do you think it worked? I mean, talking to that dog like that?
Well, you know, I'm still trying to remember this episode, but I do remember one time when you were up there, and I had Hackett with me.
Uh-huh.
And he had some, we're not sure what it was, little spots on his belly, and we're thinking it's some kind of a contact allergy, whether somebody sprayed something out in the field. And I do remember being on my hands and knees looking at his belly, and that might have been what it was.
Now you're backing away from the situation.
That's right.
I saw you. I knew exactly what was going on. I just thought it was bizarre.
Yeah. You ever have a dog that you just absolutely, it was just untrainable, just period, untrainable?
I think two, maybe three, and that's one of them that bit my thumb almost off.
Oh, dang.
And so he went home. Yeah, he went home.
With the thumb?
No, I still had it. It was kind of hanging there.
You talk about untrainables. I hear horror stories all the time about the bloodline of Chesapeakes. It seems to me like you either got a really, really good one, kind of like pit bulls. You either got a really timid, nice dog. I don't know if timid would be the word, but a good handling dog. And then Chesapeakes, everybody that I know, I had a buddy that hunted up in Maine, and he said, the dog hates me. I hate the dog. We just hunt together. And he said, that dog will. Said, all of a sudden, his pee roll up, and he turned around and looked at me, and they're going down the river in a boat, and the dog started growling at him. And I went, wow. And I've hunted around with Chesapeakes, and one day it seems like they're just stellar, and the next day they're just bizarre. Is it the bloodline? Is it? I don't want to poke at anybody that owns one, but darn it, there's something wrong with them somewhere.
Well, you tend to see patterns in a lot of different breeds for a lot of different things, and that's just one of the deals that people hear about. You know, I have literally had a Chesapeake about rip my pants off, and I think if he could have got into the skin, he probably would have ripped some leg off, but fortunately he just got a hold of my jeans. And you know, come to think of it, I think that's the other dog that we sent home.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of good ones, Fred. Don't
sure.
You know, get me wrong there.
Sure.
Once you get a Chesapeake done, oh my gosh. They're not super friendly. They're not really, you know, outgoing that much, but they are business once you get them done. And they do tend to be a one-man dog or, you know, one family dog. But I don't recommend them. You know, you better know what you're doing if you're getting a Chesapeake or have it trained. So, yep, not one of my number one dogs.
Hmm. Hey, John, what's the best way to approach a strange dog?
Well, I'll tell you what, there's a couple of ways you can do it. One, you can walk up like you own the place and don't even make eye contact with the dog and just basically ignore him. A lot of people will make the mistake of making eye contact and being timid and slow and holding their hand out and, hi, puppy, chomp. you know, just if you don't know the dog, I don't know that I'd approach it that much, but you know, soft soothing tones, if you're going to talk to the dog. But if you show fear and there's going to be an issue, boy, that's not a bad thing because they can sense that kind of stuff. But like I said, I've had dogs that come in that are just downright vicious and snapping and Dobermans and things like that, that, you know, that you would think of a dog that was going to have some issues. But you can walk in, if you are self-confident, you can walk right up to them and just, and I'm not recommending that, but you can walk right up to them. If you show the dominance, they will generally back away from you. So once they're calmed down, don't ever pat them on the head, right? And, you know, get them on the back if you can. Then you can kind of slide up to the head and scratch them on the ears and that kind of thing. And most of the time, they'll back down pretty good for you.
John, wouldn't it be the time of year, you know, if you had your lab out last year and he had bad habits, wouldn't it be time to probably bring him over to you and start working on some bad habits from last hunting season?
Well, if they don't bring him to me, they can do it themselves. But obviously it's going to be easier to bring him to a trainer. But, yeah, they can. I literally tell people when you're out hunting with this dog, take your little notebook with you. Make notes, specific notes, on what it is that you're seeing the dog do that you don't like. And then once season's over, you can train on those particular things. So now you want to continue that training, possibly by getting in some hunt tests or National Shoot to Retrieve or the NAVDA program. And basically you're continuing the season. So you can get out there and get the dog into some birds, work on some obedience, work on all kinds of things. Preparing for these tests. So, yes, that's an excellent idea, Fred.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest is John Serta, professional bird dog dog trainer, period, said, done, and over with. One we 110% recommend. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. But if you need can they still go to the thegundog.com?
Correct.
Okay. And a phone number?
It's 816-726. 6145. That is a direct line to me.
Okay. So you've got room right now if someone had this problem, red-haired child dog, that he needs to be disciplined. Would that be the place to take him over?
Yeah, we're getting fairly full, though, but we'll always make room. If they say they heard about us on the program, I will make room. I'll take one of my dogs out to the barn pens, and we'll get him into the luxury suites.
We've only got three listeners, so I doubt if any of them need you, but what the heck. Oh, well, yeah. I tell you what, I've been doing this for a lot. I don't know why, and I've asked a lot of people, why in the world do we get so emotionally involved with these dogs? They are a dog, D-O-G, they're another dog. And, I mean, when Bud Dog died and our family, we went through remorse. It was just terrible.
Yep.
It was like we did lose part of the family, and we did, you know. It was unbelievable, and we took him up to the duck club and buried him there. And I thought that the most appropriate deal, and that's what they're going to do with me, you know, next week. Yeah. They're going to take me up there and just bury me right there.
I thought you said we were dumping him in fishing rooms.
Yeah, or whatever. But
just real quick, you remember Hackett?
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a little ceremony that I go through with my dogs as well, and you remember C.W. Gus well. In his book, Chronicles of Rufus, I think it was, he has a little ceremony in there that he does when he's burying his dogs, real similar to mine. But I took him out there to a corner where we used to train some of the younger dogs and use him as the older dog to train with. And go to my website, www.thegundog.com, and look up the story of Hackett. But you want to read that story when you're by yourself, because you'll be crying.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had the guy, remember, Mark, take the ashes dog and shoot him over the field.
The departing shot.
Departing shot. I don't know if he's still in business or not, but it was just a hoot, I thought.
Yeah, he would take the cremated remains and put them in shotgun shells so you could go back to your favorite field that you hunted with that friend of yours. Mm-hmm. And
there you go. I've got one of his apps on the head post right now.
Is that right?
We did that with my second wife, too. But anyway.
Oh, my God.
That wraps it up, John. We got to go on that comment.
Boy, John, you are the best.
She could skin fish like you couldn't believe, man. She was something. Anyway, I don't want to go there. Anyway, thank you, John, for getting out of bed and joining us. TheGundog.com. Go to the website. You're going to love this guy. I 110% recommend him. You're a wonderful human, John Serta, and keep up the good work, buddy.
None better than John Serta.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, buddy. We are brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, St. Joseph, Missouri. Still got a few new ones. Getting some every once in a while. It's for some reason, 3/4 ton showed up. So if you're in the mood and you want to be treated with dignity and respect, that's what I like about this place. Non-commissioned salespeople. They're the best family I know. They're just wonderful, wonderful people. If you knew what I knew about them, they're not a car dealer. They're a family organization. So please do business with Reed Chevrolet, I-29 Frederick, St. Joseph, Missouri. Got to go for this week, guys. fun. Thanks for coming in, Greg.
Yeah, thanks.
Enjoyed it, as always.
Thanks for getting Palmer for us.
Good kid.
It was a good kid. Very well disciplined. We're a good kid.
Yeah, go to our website and look at the picture.
And go to Tuttle Creek and catch a big crappie.
Yeah.
Tell you what, that wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. We got to go for this week. The next time we see ya, I hope we see you in a great outdoors.
Have a great week. So long, everybody.